Joining us now here at the Taste of Elyria event is Lisa Roberson from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Lisa, thanks as always for coming on and giving us some of your time. And boy, you're witnessing this whole event with us here too. I know we all kind of collectively saw those cupcakes pass a few seconds ago. We're all tempted to run into that room, so we won't keep you too long.
Absolutely. I will be in the room before you will.
I know you will. You have to give us a scouting report on what's good and what we should get in there and give it a shot. So before we get into some of the other stuff here, I want to get into the city of Elyria celebrating its bicentennial. And I know the fountain at Ely Square has kind of been labeled as the city's bicentennial legacy project. What can you tell us about this whole process, and how far do you think we are away from seeing a finished product?
Well, we are still in the fundraising stage, according to Mayor Holly Brenda. The fountain at Ely Square is an interesting project because the fountain there has been a fountain in Ely Square for quite some time, decades actually. A lot of people remember the fountain there, and they take their kids there, they take pictures there. The current fountain is in a state of disrepair. Each spring, the city's park and recreation department, they kind of cobble it together and get it running again. It's leaking water, it's rusting in certain places, and so they have tried for many years to come up with a plan to replace it. And now with the city's bicentennial, the mayor said that she would like to raise the funds to add a completely new fountain down there. It will be lights, water spouts. It would be a really beautiful thing, that the display she showed us. But the fountain that she's suggesting is going to be between $800,000 and $900,000.
Wow. It's going to have all kinds of lights and everything, I saw too. It sounds pretty neat.
Absolutely. She's fundraising for it. She said that the city will raise the funds through all philanthropic efforts, mm-hmm. and the city's general fund or any of the tax money will not go towards the fountain. I'm not sure where we're at in the process. Yeah. I've kind of edged or kind of pushed her, say, can you tell me some of the key sponsors? Can you tell me who's going to really be backing this? And she keeps saying, you know, once I get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, I'll let you know. But so we're hoping. She's pushed back a lot of the deadlines. They were supposed to start construction actually pretty soon because they were going to have a dedication in August. That's not happening as far as I know, just because they're still trying to firm up some plans of fundraising.
So it sounds like this was pretty much in place anyway. The bicentennial just became that era where they could say, look, it's bicentennial year. Let's get this fountain together. Let's see what we can do with it with the fundraising after.
Absolutely. If you recall, there was an issue last year where someone put blue dye into the fountain.
Right.
And one of the reasons why they said, please don't put the dye in the fountain, is because the fountain is in such disrepair. Sure. They're concerned about what any little thing could do to the fountain to kind of speed up the disrepair.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't want the blue dye to leak out into the square, and you have kind of this blue water oozing out. So,
That's a good point.
It's kind of, they've been working on this idea about the fountain for quite some time.
Sure. Is that one of the reasons perhaps they want to put those lights in there as well so they can change the color if
they want to change the color. They want to, you know, so you can move away from the dye if you can just have the blue lights for a special occasion. I believe the blue lights were put on, the blue water was in memory of Sergeant James Kersetter.
Yeah, for the 5K, wasn't it?
For his 5K, yes. And so this time they can just put the blue lights up, and there can be a wonderful, you know, way to honor
people.
That
would be cool.
Well, you mentioned that Mayor Brenda's plan was to dedicate this thing in August. Was that supposed to be done in and around the parade?
It was supposed to be the weekend of the parade, I do believe, because
okay.
the parade is going to be August 5th.
Okay.
A bicentennial parade that's going to be a new event, of course, because you don't celebrate your bicentennial every day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she wants it to be this grand parade complete with floats. She's encouraging local businesses to create floats to celebrate their history and legacy in Elyria. Actually, the Chronicle-Telegram is thinking about making our own float. We're tossing some ideas out.
What kinds of ideas can you toss out there? Hoping that nobody else can steal these ideas.
That's the question.
Well, I'll have to tell you, our own Bruce Bishop thought it would be a great idea if we tied root beer floats into our float. You know, give out a root beer float along the way.
I was just going to say, you give out root beer floats from your float, you can draw a lot of attention.
That's a winner
right
there.
That is the plan.
Yeah.
So far, Bill Hutnut, who's kind of vetoed that idea.
Go figure, huh?
Yeah, I can see why. Yeah. That sounds like a pretty awesome idea. It can get really, really messy. I'm not sure the city of Elyria would like to clean that mess up at the end.
And I can imagine it can get pretty expensive.
That's what I was thinking.
Thousands of people on your parade route, and you have to give everyone root beer floats as you're moving along.
Yeah.
And we can probably hold up up the parade as we're scooping out
ice
cream.
That's a good point, too, yeah.
So there's a lot that would go into the whole root beer float idea.
I suppose that's why they throw candy, a little cheaper. You don't
have to. And it can keep the parade moving, keep everything moving.
Indeed.
Plus, kids love candy, and candy, for the most part, can be harmless. You're throwing root beer floats at people, that could do some serious damage. So if you're giving away candy, everybody can get behind it.
Well, see, I even came up with a little tagline, because I said, hey, if we give out root beer floats, it can be because the Chronicle-Telegram is rooted in the community.
Ah, well done. I mean, if I don't know the little rim shot here, but if we had that, we could play that. That was very well done. Lisa Roberson, our guest here from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. And again, we're coming at you live from Life Care Center of Elyria at the A Taste of Elyria event. Well, you wrote a really awesome piece about a week or so ago, and I thought it was pretty cool how you detailed some things in here about how we're trying to get kids more involved and getting more interested in becoming teachers. And there are a lot of interesting pieces in this article and really a lot of cool stuff in there about the Pioneers Rising organization. What can you tell us about that club and how that's kind of helped the process of inspiring kids to want to become teachers again?
Well, Pioneer Rising started with our current human resource director, Gary Taylor. Gary Taylor and I have spoken many times over the years about recruitment efforts in the district, especially to bring more men and minorities to the teaching field. He talks about how he's constantly going to college fairs and, you know, trying to drum up a lot of, you know, the idea of coming to Elyria to be a teacher. He's always at colleges trying to talk to these recent grads. And he says that the pool of candidates is getting smaller and smaller. Fewer people are deciding they want to go into education. And so this Pioneer Rising was this idea of, well, since fewer kids want to go into education and want to be teachers, maybe we should just kind of grow our own teachers. Find some young people, high school students who are interested in education, who want to be in the classroom, and kind of pair them off with teachers in the building who want to kind of grow this talent to be their mentors and kind of push them through the process. And so this is in their first year. They have a group of about 25 students and two teachers that are working with them, and they meet after school, and they just kind of talk about all the issues related to education, you know, and what's it like to be in the classroom.
Interesting stuff. No, I thought it was cool reading through there, too, about finding out about how, you know, they're trying to get more men and minorities involved in that process. And I guess the other thing that was really interesting, too, is that this issue of finding teachers, especially in those two groups, it's not necessarily a new thing, is it?
No, I believe they hire teachers in waves, and you may, you know, 20 years ago, there was a huge wave of women and men going into the teaching field, and they wanted to be teachers. And so there was a plethora of teachers to pick from, especially in Ohio, because Ohio has so many colleges and universities that are geared towards education. You have Bowling Green, you have Ashland. They have these stellar education programs that are like churning out all of these teachers. And so we didn't have this problem. But see, now those teachers who started 20, 25 years ago, they're retiring. And if you have more teachers retiring than people who are trying to enter the field, then you come up with this deficit that you have to fill somehow.
Well, it seems like a remarkable idea as well. I think I saw one of the quotes by Tom Jama in that paper was, look, if you want to go get your education degree and come back to Elyria and work, we'll find a job for you here. So I think that's a pretty cool concept, to grow your own teachers, bring them back, and you know what they're capable of doing.
Absolutely. And I think Elyria is a very unique community, and it takes one to know one. Kind of thing we talk about Elyria. And so when the kids are at Elyria High or in the Elyria schools, it really helps when they have someone who can say, I used to sit in these exact same chairs, I've been in this exact same classroom, you know, you have so much potential because I know the potential you have because I've had the same thing.
Sure, and they're very influential as well. They can make a very big difference. All right, I have to ask you this. Lisa's a very interesting follow on Twitter, and I don't know how this popped up or what made this come up. Who in the world is messing with your hair in the office? Your coworkers really come by and like give you noogies? What do they do? Who's messing with your hair? And what would prompt you to put that on Twitter? It must have made you pretty upset.
It does make me upset. I change my hair pretty often, I would say. And sometimes people would come into my little cubicle space and they just kind of, oh, you've changed your hair. And they kind of just rub their hand across. It's very annoying to me. It's very off-putting.
I can understand that.
I don't like the idea of being petted. So
that does seem a little odd. Bull changes his hair all the time, too.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, the last time I was here, I probably had 8 to 10 inches more hair. You guys didn't notice that I
did notice. I was going to say something, but I wasn't sure if I missed something along the lines. But now that he's pointed out this Twitter feed, I'll have to pay more attention.
I was saving that for the end of the interview for that purpose because I don't want to ruffle any feathers. But see, I saw that pop up, and I figured there had to be a haircut somewhere in the equation because you don't just go to Twitter talking about how people are messing with your hair unless there was a reason for it to come over. But see, that's just the weirdest thing. See, we're in an office that's, I guess, somewhat mixed. There's a decent chunk of females, but it's predominantly male there.
Sure.
So we don't go walking around messing with each other's hair.
Not a lot of it, yeah.
There's got to be a specific reason for that. I just think that's odd that coworkers feel compelled to do that.
There's also not a lot of hair in our office.
That's
I'll say
too.
That,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Most of
I
us are going bald.
Admit that I have this thing with my hair, so yeah. I change it often. It's curly one day, straight the next day. It's up one day, it's down the next.
It's all right. It does look nice, too, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what happens when you have a child that's getting ready to go to college. You start to feel your age.
Yeah.
So I decided, I was like, I will younging things up a little bit, if that even is a word, by cutting the hair. You know what they say?
Yeah.
You know, the older you get, the shorter your hair is supposed to get. So I decided I wanted to kind of bring some youth back into my life and cut my hair.
Very nice. So you've kind of discovered that fountain of youth as far as the haircut goes.
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, everyone loves the haircut but my daughter.
Oh, boy. Well, she's going to Ohio State in a few months, right? So.
Yes. So. August 19th, she moves in. But who's counting the days?
Oh, right. Yeah. You knew the exact date right off the top of your head. Very impressive. Lisa, we appreciate you stopping by as always. I know you're going in there to sample. So we need a full scouting report when you come out of that room. Let us know what
Absolutely.
We need to try.
Absolutely. I'll come back and tell you all of the great things that I had to taste.
Sounds good.
Sounds awesome. That's Lisa Roberson of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.